This is the sort of telemetry we get from the Soyuz spacecraft, or we used to get from the Soyuz spacecraft. It's pulse duration modulation. And you will hear, and if you count, there are 29 pulses there. That is a synchronizing train of pulses, which does several things. First of all, it marks the start of the telemetry frame of 15 bleeps or 15 words. Secondly, it gives you a measure, because there's a gap for three more pulses, which gives you the 32, which is 2 to the n, and you can work out n, with which to measure the length of these bleeps. And another thing that it does is it provides various pieces of information. So if you listen carefully, I will count you through this tedious recording. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... long. Right. You didn't bother to count until it goes brrr again. But the next time, this one will be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, that was a short one. I've gone past it. That's all right. There was a short one there. Now we're going to get two more of those, because it was short for a minute, and then it will go to medium. 1, 2. What you've got to do is to get condition yourself to realise that medium is longer than short in a minute. Also, wait for the break, not for a commercial. That's caused by pulling the jack plug out exactly on the minute so you know where the time is on your tape. Now that was the medium one, you see. And why, you say, does that sort of thing happen? Well, we didn't know. With Soyuz 3 and Soyuz 4, word 8 had always been medium. It wasn't until Soyuz 5 that we got this 1 minute of medium, 1 minute of long, 1 minute of short, 1 minute like this, you see. So there was obviously a threeness about Soyuz 5. And Soyuz 5 had three men in it, whereas all the others had only had one. And this was, as it says there, biomedical subcommutation. Before we go on to that, let me point out that when they quantize their data to send it back, they logarithmically amplify it. If you remember what a slide rule looks like, if you've got a small value, it stretches out the small values to something reasonable, and the long value stops you going over the far end. So it goes through a logarithmic amplifier before it's quantized and telemetered. Now, we were a bit perplexed about this, but we realized that if you had three men and you wanted to see how they were healthy, we were looking for heart rate. In fact, we found respiration rate. You would need three channels. But, I mean, a guy isn't suddenly going to die in 2 minutes, is he? So the Russians got round this by using word 8 to show which cosmonaut they were monitoring, and word 4 to show what his respiration rate was. And that they saved a channel. The day after they launched Soyuz 5, we noticed something else. We noticed that 6 and 7, which are always short, suddenly on Soyuz 4, word 7 was very long. We actually got a Great Northern Telegraph Company Limited Undulator Mark II from the Post Office Museum about 4 days before they launched these two Soyuz. And so we were able to see the bleeps, which was a new order of magnitude. It moved us up a gear. And we didn't know what was happening. We hadn't got a clue. This was at 09:32, just after it had gone by. At 11:20, when it came round again, we suddenly found that in Soyuz 4, we were getting the long, short, medium, long, short, medium sequence. So whereas we'd only had one man, Shatalov, in Soyuz 4, we'd now got three men in Soyuz 4 and only one man in Soyuz 5. Now, we didn't see them go, but we knew that they'd actually transferred. And this was before the Russians announced that they'd done it. And then an hour and a half later at 12:45, this was back to normal. Short, short, and again the consecutive sequences. And when the Russians said what had happened, they said that they had depressurized the orbital module, climbed out, pulled themselves across in open space, and gone into the depressurized module of Soyuz 4, and that told us that this was the orbital module pressure, or rather the orbital module vacuum, because a very long pulse here is a very high vacuum, and a short normal pulse is here means actual normal pressure. Another recording. Russian spy satellite, second generation spy satellite. We tuned that out as Morse code interference. But then we realised, three revs later, it got a Doppler shift on it. And this is it slowed down. I'll just tell you quickly about that. Those Morse code groups, which we'll play them, you can hear them. Did-da-dit-did-da-dit. That's a 3-1-3. Did-da-dit-did-da-dit. U-E-S. Now that marks the beginning of the frame. You've got 1-3-1-3 group, and then you've got 11-2-3-2 groups like these. ISN. That's a 2-3-2 group. And it seemed obvious that this would be binary code. You put a naught with a dot and a one with a dash. And I lectured on this at Aberystwyth and Cardiff, one half term, and my daughter came with me, and we stopped at the Severn Bridge service area on the way home, and she said in her little innocence, "Aren't you embarrassed saying that you don't understand what that means?" And I said, "Yes, but the key lies in word seven, because word seven is different every time the satellite comes round, and it sometimes changes while we're listening to it." So with sort of daughter prompting, when I got back to school to start the next half of the term, I said to David Muggleton, "Look, David, take this last satellite and write out all the word sevens and then put the dots and dashes in again," which he did. And as he was in the second sitting of dinner, when the bell went at 12:25, I walked up the back of the lab to see how he was getting on, and I looked at him across the bench, and I could see this thing changing by one, because the Russians, the rotten devils, transmit their binary backwards. The first bit is the least significant bit. And when now, when you did that, you found that word seven slowly increased through the flight. And word seven actually was the exposure counter on their film reconnaissance camera. And they still, even with their, if you picked up the Russian RS amateur satellites, they transmit their binary backwards too, because they have groups of letters, which if you read them backwards in the binary, gives you a straightforward number. If there are any questions that you would like to ask me, I would be very happy to answer them. If you want to go home, I will not take offence. And thank you for listening, and smiling politely, Dr. Essex, at the right point when I mentioned Faraday and Doppler. But don't be too cruel to me. Thank you. Well, the Chinese sent me that picture of China too. Yes, they know what we do. And the Soviet Union, I used to write to Boris Petrov, who was the head of the Intercosmos program, and unfortunately he died, and I never did take up with Katonikov. Boris was all right, he used to acknowledge the stuff we sent him, but when they launched the second Intercosmos satellite, we didn't pick up the signals, and I wrote to him asking for the frequency, and he deliberately misunderstood it. He said it would be very difficult to add another ground station at this late stage of the program. But I didn't want to switch it on and off, I wanted just to listen to it. No, they know what we do. I mean, I meet them at international exhibitions, and they're well aware of our work. And if they don't want me to listen, they would change their frequencies and dump their transmissions into the middle of the Soviet Union in the same way that the Americans dumped theirs into Pine Gap. you don't get many Russian trawlers near Pine Gap. Now I've stirred it up, yes. I don't know what pine gap is. It's just a buzzword that you drop and make Australians laugh. I used to think it was near Ayers Rock. That shows you how much I know. I used to think it's pretty important. What is pine gap? I should imagine that satellites which transit down over the Soviet Union dump information into pine gap where the Russians can't intercept it. It's then sort of beamed up and across the other side. I mean, it makes sense there. So I would think it's important. And the only way that you can intercept that sort of stuff is by having your own satellite sitting up there and trying to intercept from up on top what's going down below. No, we looked at orbital periods changing due to micro thrusters on the Russian ones, because the ones which drop their nuclear payloads over Canada, they make small micro manoeuvres to maintain station with each other and to keep their height at 265 kilometres. So when Andy Driver came to me in November 1977 and said, "My satellite has stopped manoeuvring," I said, "Well, don't worry, lad, it'll soon move to the higher orbit." And he came a week later, he said, "You know, it isn't manoeuvring." So I said, "Well, let me check your figures." And it wasn't. And we knew that this thing with the... we thought it was radioactive power source for the radar satellite. We knew that it would come down sort of towards the end of March. But on the 6th of January, according to the Russians, a catastrophic event occurred when it was out of range of the Soviet Union. And it began to tumble. It lost its attitude. And as people in Western Australia know, when satellites tumble, they come down near Esperance. And this thing started to accelerate its decay and come down much earlier than March. And I was teaching one afternoon, and the telephone went, and I went out the back, and a voice said, "This is UPI. Do you know anything about this satellite which has come down over Canada?" I said, "Do you mean Cosmos 954? He said, "Yes, yes, how did you know?" I said, "Well, we thought it was going to come down tomorrow." He said, "You thought it was going to come down tomorrow?" I said, "Oh yes, it's been in trouble since last November." "Since last November? How long have you known?" I said, "Since last November." "Good God," he said, "Mr. Trudeau didn't know till this morning." And that's a true story, but you probably won't believe it. I've had a great deal of enjoyment in pursuing my hobby. And thank you for listening to me and asking me to come to Australia. Thank you.